Picking a title for this episode is going to be the biggest challenge ever, because I've got a tale of two markets, standing between emotions and money, and then somewhere in the middle of all this, we've covered everything from Donald Trump, Jesus Christ, Bill Maher, Kid Rock. I don't think we need to take 3 weeks off anymore. I think we need to be more consistent. You had a lot of build up there, brother.
I know. I was like, I'm like a giant pimple that just popped.
Welcome back to the Intelligent Investment Show featuring Matt Dahl. Presented by ARPG, 17 minutes late for our 1 o'clock start time and 1 week late from our scheduled last recording time. So, hey, better late than never, man. Good to see you, brother.
Good to see you again. Good morning. It's a that was a nice discussion. Let's continue.
Very nice. Yeah, we finally – so we had a we had to skip our pre-production call yesterday, and I don't know if we meant to skip it. I just didn't have it on the calendar. And so we've had to do a very quick rapid-fire pre-production call, I guess. And the conversation got so fun, I said, we got to start recording. This is too good. So I'm going to start off, we'll get back to the fun part here in just a minute. But I want to tee this up, first of all, by saying, you know, you made a pretty bold call the last time we spoke, April 4th. You've made some calls and they've worked out. Eventually, but you knew you even admitted you're sticking your neck out there a little bit on this one. You said, I'm calling the bottom, and you called a rip your face off rally off of a bottom of what, around 5,000. And man, you missed it. I mean, it was April 4th, April 7th, we were down a tenth or two, and April 8th was just, you know, more. That's my daughter's birthday, by the way. The market did not give my daughter a good birthday present. We're down a little bit more there. You had to wait all the way until April 9th. To get your face ripped off. So you got to work on your precision.
I apologize to everyone. I would like to issue a formal official apologies from ARPG to all of our listeners. I missed it by a couple of days. I'm sorry. However, that wasn't a face ripper. That was like a Freddy Krueger rip your guts out and show them to you rally. That was a 500 S&P point day, a nearly 2000 NASDAQ day, nearly 3000 Dow day. Those are the days you live for, and those are the days we communicate with our clients. We say, you know, if we pull you out of the market because we get scared, you're going to miss those moments. And there's a really great story I have about that. A client of mine I spoke with on Monday, he called, and he's a fairly new client of ours, and he's a little bit herky-jerky. He's a little bit, you know, nervous about the markets because it's a substantial-sized client. And he's not had a lot of money in the markets over the years. So this is kind of new to him, you know, about less than a year. So this is his first real experience with a market correction. Okay. So he said to me, listen, I think we should probably, you know, should we be getting out of the market? And I said, I don't think so. This is just a normal spring correction, you know, kind of a 10, 15. We might get to 20%, which is kind of where we were. Okay, but I don't really, this doesn't seem permanent because politics are not permanent. Okay, they can move the markets drastically quickly, but they're typically not permanent because we don't have a structural problem with the economy. We don't have earnings deteriorating. We don't have credit freezing up. We don't have the labor markets coming apart. None of those things are taking place. So, you know, I really think we should just hold tight and you'll be fine. Well, although that's what I got from the conversation, he got from the conversation that I was going to pull him from the markets. Okay. Well, I didn't. So he calls on Wednesday, very, very late afternoon. And he says, oh, Matt, my goodness. Huh. Wow. You were right. These rallies can really just come out of nowhere and just go nuts on you.
Yeah.
And then he said, well, should we get back in the markets? And I said, I can't tell you his name, but I said, well, I never pulled you out. He goes, what? I said, no. I said, my job is to stand between you and your emotions. My job is to stand between your emotions and your money. Do you understand? And he said, okay. And I said, so, no, I didn't really get from the conversation that you wanted me to pull you from the markets. Okay. If you would have given me that explicit order, I certainly would have done that. Okay. Because the clients are always the boss. And he said, so you didn't pull me from the markets? I said, no. And then I let him know how much money he made that day. And he was like, you're lucky I made 100 miles away from you, or I would be giving you lots of displays of affection in public. We will be talking. You know, so he was, and then in that moment, you could almost hear the light bulb click on over his head through the phone.
Yeah.
He's like, I understand now these volatile times, people try to outsmart the volatility. They don't do it. They never do. Okay. Yeah. They say they do. They only tell you about their wins, but they never tell you about their losses. And their losses occur when they're not participating in days like that. Yeah. Not that they didn't sell or buy at the right time, but typically when they come out of the market and then it goes down from there, okay, did they do good? Maybe, maybe not. But then they're not there for those days, right?
Right.
That's how you miss. So, you know, it's funny when you position yourself. Hopefully we've talked about this before, that you've done the fundamental work, you've built the portfolios, the macro thesis, the top down and the bottom up thesis together to put these portfolios together, knowing that, yeah, it's not going to be a perfect straight line. And there's going to be fits and starts depending on what's happening on the political front or the economic front or the labor front or whatever it may be. But you're confident that these companies are going to be okay in the long term. So if you try to outsmart yourself, you're absolutely going to just, you know, get your you know what handed to you.
Yeah. So let's break down that rally. So it was April 9th. We're up 9.5%. Am I getting that number right?
The S&P on April 9th was up 474.13 points, 9.52%.
Okay. Close. I said 9.5. So I was off by two basis points. 9.5. What does that even rank all time? I mean, that's got to be.
I think it's number two.
Number two. I mean, that's huge. I mean, I remember back in the COVID days when we were seeing some 5, 6, 8% swings. Even a lot of those were record breakers or up there. So second biggest rally of all time.
Yeah. It's the single largest point day, but I think it's the second largest percentage day.
Okay. So break that down as best you can. I mean, what we talk a lot about the data and, you know, I think on the last show, maybe we said a lot of times we forget about the math when there's blood in the water. We just kind of freak out. So can you even begin to math out how we made 9.5% in one day? What was the announcement that made the market worth? This was incredible. You told me earlier before we recorded, the market cap was up $5 trillion essentially on April 9th. So what was said? I mean, I know we know what was said. It was an announcement from Trump, but what – from what he said, made the total global market capitalization worth $5 trillion more on April 9th than it was on April 8th?
Well, long story short, the probability of recession went from basically 75% down to about 35% in that moment. And that's, and we'll get to this later, that's what makes him such a powerful person.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you look at the typical recession, you'll have a pullback of about 27-28% on the S&P. Okay. So with a pullback of call it 20, it's a nice round number. Okay. We were pricing in about a 75% probability of recession. So let's bring in today. Today we have a 50% retracement of the entire move from 61.47 on February 19th to 48.35 on April 8th. Okay. So we went through at 54.91. That was a 50% move. On April 9th, we finished at 54.69, right under that number. So we removed 50% of the entire loss from February 19th, or 49%, if you will, 49.5%, from February 19th to April the 8th. We removed that in one day. And what that was the tariffs, obviously the tariffs got paused, which lowered the odds of recession. And how it lowered the odds of recession was very simple, was the market said, okay, there's negotiations going to happen. These tariffs that we're seeing that were announced on Liberation Day likely will not come to fruition in their current form. It will be something different, less, who knows, but it will be something different. And thus, obviously, the chances of recession significantly reduced in that moment. The market saw that. The market bought it, and it popped basically just to barely under where we are right now. I mean, right now we're at 55.25, which is a very important number. By 5,500 specifically, 54.91, 5,500 is that kind of line in the sand, and we're above it now. But we almost got there on April 9th. So we cut the, that's how volatile the market is as far as, do we think we're going into a recession or do we not? I mean, that's how tricky this thing is right now. It's been a very, 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 very difficult market to try to understand and call and work through, right? But for me, it was, okay, odds of recessions went from 75% to 35 to 40%, just bang, in that moment. And the market bought it. The market bought it back quickly. The algorithm saw it, and they just started buying. And the buying begat more buying, which begat more buying, which begat more buying. I remember that. Actually, I wasn't in the office that day. It was my brother. And I just like, I got to stop looking at this thing because there's no way this is real. I'm going to look at it at the end of the day, and the market's going to be down. I'm going to be in a bad mood again, right? I looked at it again. I was like, holy moly. I'm like 470. I was looking at the S&P, and I'm like, 474? That's like a Dow number or a really good NASDAQ day number. That's not an S&P number. You know, and a good S&P day is, you know, 50 points, 60 points, right? I mean, once in a while, you'll get a, we call it a 433, or where you get a quadruple, a four-digit Dow number, and then three-digit NASDAQ number and a three-digit S&P number. That day, we had a 443. We had two four-digit numbers and a three-digit number. That three-digit number wasn't close to a three-digit number. It was way up there. So that was out of control. And that's what it was, is the market is trying to figure out in very real time, very quickly, are we going to a massive global recession or are we not? And these tariffs likely could bring us to recession because, especially with the retaliatory efforts from China, or will they not? And that's what that whole thing was about that day, in my opinion.
So give me that number again. You said the odds of a recession went down from what to what? Was it like 65% to 35%?
The market was pricing in, if you look at the average recessionary pullback of the market, called 27%, 28%. And we were at 20%. So we were effectively pricing in about a 75% chance of a recession in that moment. And it retraced 50% of that move that day. So yeah. The market then cut that number in half, call it 35-40%. Now, subsequent to that, the market moved back down and got into the 5200s and 5100s. Actually got to 5000 again. But then it came right back. Here we are, you know, 5520. So, as we sit here on April 25th, so there's just a lot of consternation. We saw the VIX spike to 60, okay? And now we're below 30. We're actually, I think, 26 today. So we're seeing a lot of the protection costs come down. So these are good things.
Yeah. So before we get to the lightning rod here in a minute, which I'm really looking forward to, but before we get to that, because we've talked about the tariffs on this is all tariffs, right? Like that's pretty much what we're talking about. Earnings aren't an issue. It's not. This is strictly just off the tariffs, right?
Right.
Okay. So we've talked about the tariffs before, and you had I don't want to say controversial, just maybe a counterintuitive thought about the tariffs and what it would mean for actual earnings and what it would actually mean for the economy. So I guess my just simple question here is do we know what we're afraid of, or are we just afraid of Trump starting a economic war with everybody and creating a big problem? Is it the fear of the unknown, or do we actually know specifically what we're afraid of?
No, it's 100% the fear of the unknown. Here's why. Okay. Let's look at earnings and multiples and uncertainties, right? Just kind of build this whole funky puzzle. So we were sitting at 22 and a half times, almost 23 times earnings, 22.7 times earnings in late February. Okay. That is in the 99th decile of where the market should be living. Okay, that's a very high multiple. Okay, so it had room to come down, right? So what we have seen, what we saw, was effectively a four multiple, a thousand point. No, geez, we saw a 1,200 point move in the S&P. Okay, so if you look at the earnings of a call of almost $300 a share, you're talking about a 4x on the multiple, a four times move on the multiple. Okay. That's what happened. Why did the multiple go down from 22 and a half times to 18 and a half times in that from the peak to trough? That was the uncertainty. That was the markets like certainty. Fundstrat had a great piece about this, And he says the reason the market was crashing was because one of the covenants of capitalism was broke. It's called a covenant of capitalism. One of the covenants of capitalism is a stable regulatory environment. That stable regulatory environment brings a modicum of certainty, right? Your earnings, your interest rates, your growth rates, all those things. When you bring a situation like a tariff, a massive tariff, you know, we don't know if the tariffs are 20%, 10%, 15%, or 50%, or 150%, okay? That removes that stable regulatory environment significantly. Thus, the multiple contracts tremendously. So if you look at the fundamental side, the structural side, okay, let's look at where the S&P was on January 31st. Let's look where the estimates were in the end of January versus where the estimates are today. They haven't changed that much. What has changed is the multiple. The reason the multiple has changed is because of the lack of certainty that we compare in relative terms to what we used to have just a couple of months ago. Okay. S&P earnings end of January, and I always like to use the end of January numbers because it was those numbers that we had before the market peaked in the end of, you know, kind of middle of February, February 19th. So S&P earnings estimates in end of January were $270 a share. Okay. Right now they're at 264 and a quarter. They're down 2.15%. Okay. Yeah. That's not huge. That's not massive. NASDAQ, 692.14 a share. We're down to 673.68, 2.7% loss in earnings estimates from January 31st to today. Now, a big chunk of that is Tesla. Okay. Tesla has had a 29% estimate decrease. So they're a big part of the NASDAQ. The Dow down 3.7% in earnings guidance. That's it. If you want to break out the sectors, which I think is important, the XLK, which is the tech sector, which does not include Tesla. Tesla is actually listed in the consumer discretionary. So Amazon and Tesla together make up about 45% of the consumer discretionary sector, just those two companies. Okay, Amazon being the largest, about 30%. But if you look at the XLK, the tech sector as a whole, earnings are down 8 cents, 0.9% since January 31st. Less than 1%. Okay.
Yeah.
The communication services, which is Meta, Google's, those guys, right? Down 2%. 2% down 11 cents a share. That's all it is.
Yeah.
The industrial sector, which is a very important sector especially for Trump, especially for tariffs, down 4%. That's it. It's the consumer discretionary sector, specifically Tesla in that sector, that's down 10%. And that's down 10% because 15% is down 30%, right? Tesla being 15% of that index is down 30%. So if you kind of X Tesla out, it's not so bad. So what we've seen is that contraction of multiple because of the growth of uncertainty, which has just gone out magnitudes. And the more Trump kind of reins in his tariff talk and his willingness to negotiate and a willingness to say, hey, you know, we can remove these tariffs, but we want to see something on your side too. The more the market likes it, and the more you start to see this multiple kind of start to reinflate a little bit.
Yeah. And there's an academic reason for that too. I mean, when very, very simple, like finance 101, investors are going to seek higher returns for higher risk. If you're taking more risk, you're going to want to see higher returns, right? So if you think about that, in order to justify the return on the risk that you're going to get when things get a little bit volatile, you're not going to be willing to pay as much when things are crazy than when they're higher, because to get that higher stated return, you're going to need a lower price to do it. So there's a pretty good fundamental academic reason that volatility brings lower markets and the market, what you said, market doesn't like volatility. That's why, because volatility is uncertainty. And if I'm going to take on that uncertainty, then I'm going to want a better price, which means we need to take the price down a little bit.
Right.
So in pre-production, you have managed, and hey, look, my favorite thing about doing this show with you is that I don't have to come up with controversial stuff to say because you come up with it. And then when you say it, I don't, you know, I'm just the delivery mechanism, right? Like it's not on me. But you made a statement, not that that's a strong statement. I think it's, I don't think you're wrong. It's funny because from doing this podcasting stuff, I've learned that there's a couple of things that if I'm trying to promote a show or promote something, there's a few keywords that if I have them included in any of the advertising or any of the videos or anything like that, it's going to get flagged or red flagged and say it's inappropriate. Where, and you managed to hit two of them in about one sentence.
Nice. I take pride in that.
You hit a double. You hit a two for one. So go ahead and just share the raw version. What, tell me what you said before we hit record. Because I think you said this, and I said, we better go ahead and start recording before it gets any better.
Well, it's been an idea that's been floating around my little pea brain head for, honestly, since kind of the middle of March, right? President Trump is an incredibly effective communicator, okay? And his communications have actual consequences, good and bad, by the way. I'm not using consequences in a bad way. And I'm not sharing this as I believe this to be true. I'm sharing this as, I think this is a worthy discussion to have. And I think it's a phenomenal time that we are living in human history right now. And I think this, the history books will look back on this time and they will look through it with all kinds of scopes and studies, and they may come to a conclusion that I'm coming to, that Donald Trump may be the most powerful human who has ever existed on planet Earth. And I mean that. Okay. X, maybe Jesus. Okay.
So that's where we got. So you've gone through a long list of people who could not do what Donald Trump did. And then you got to Jesus, and I said, oh, now Jesus, son of God, now we can't go there. But I will say this, Jesus wouldn't have done it. There's not anybody else that's ever walked the earth that could have moved the market $5 trillion just with one sentence. I think that's probably a true thing. Jesus could have, but he wouldn't have. I don't think he cared about the stock market so much.
No, it's not Jesus's thing. But here's the thing is, you look at all the kings and queens of England and Europe and Germany and the barons, Hitler, Stalin, you name it, Putin, Xi Jinping, none of them, not Ronald Reagan, not Frank Roosevelt, Abraham Lincoln, or George Washington, had the ability to communicate to so many people so quickly in such an effective manner. Donald Trump is able to send out a communication, okay, and it changes the capital markets in an instant, in a material way. He changes the fortunes of billions of people on planet Earth with his communications. And I'm not judging the communications, good or bad. Yeah. That's not my place. Okay. But obviously the market, and you have to go back to Election Day. What happened on Election Day, right? The market was kind of shucking and jiving. And then Election Day, then the day after Election Day, it just went parabolic. Okay.
Yeah.
And then it kind of bled off a little bit into December when it kind of digested a little bit. And then he got inaugurated and the markets floated right back up, all-time highs, 61.47 on February 19th. And that's when the tariff discussions really started to really take root. Okay. And from there, it took the market down about 20%. Okay. And I'm not, again, we're not judging this as a good or bad thing.
Right.
Okay. And then there was the Liberation Day, the April 2nd Tariff Liberation Day, or whatever they call it, okay? And markets just did not know what to do with it. And when markets don't know what to do, they sell, okay? And that's what happened. And it was across the world, okay? I mean, the U.S. companies, our market cap is 30% of global GDP. And it took the market down, you know, 19 trillion dollars just in the U.S. So you're probably talking it was about $50 to $60 trillion globally that got lost over that course of time. Well, actually, not well. The other markets didn't do as bad as ours, so it's probably about $30 trillion of total loss over that course of time. And then when there was a pause that took place, obviously the markets were contracting and collapsing, and there was volatility was spiking, and we don't know if that had any impact on Trump's decision calculus. It may have, it may not, I don't know. Okay. But for whatever reason, he paused the tariffs. So, and when he paused the tariffs, again, it was a simple communication. We're pausing the tariff for 90 days while we work this out or whatever was communicated. And the market just exploded the other way. And again, trillions of dollars were made, billions of dollars, or billions of people made a tremendous amount of money in that moment, in that day, okay, for because of his communications to the world, to the markets, to the world markets too. And you have to step back and zoom out, I guess, right, and respect that at a level that I don't think a lot of people truly understand, right? That is a power that I don't know that has ever existed before. And somebody who has that level of ability to communicate and is that effective of a communicator, he's a very, whether you like him or you don't like him, he knows how to communicate very, very well.
Okay? Yeah.
And he gets his point across. Okay. So I can't think of any human in history that could communicate to so many people and have such an effect, good or bad, good and bad, okay, in such a small period of time, okay?
Yeah.
And again, you have to take that by itself and look at it and study it and say, yeah, he can change the world. There is one person on this earth who can change the world in a material way, X any military action with nuclear bombs like Putin or Xi, but can change the fortunes of billions of people on planet Earth in a moment's notice. Xi Jinping, if he tweeted a few things out or whatever, it would probably be, there would probably be some movement, not near as much as Trump, and certainly not Putin. So, you know, that is something worth looking at. It's something worth respecting, and it's something worth, you know, acknowledging. If nothing else, I think it's worth acknowledging.
Well, and it's something that, and I'm going to bring in another angle of this too, in a way that, have you seen the any of the clips or heard the thing about Bill Maher going to the White House and his, like, his takeaway from his dinner with Trump?
Yeah, I watched the Bill Maher show after that, and where he gave his rundown of it, right? He sort of gave the autopsy of the dinner, and he said Trump was incredibly charming. You know, very cordial, very courteous, very respectful, and that he has a job. And he, for lack of a better description, is President Trump has a job to do as the president. When he's communicating to the world, that's who he is. He is the president of the United States, and that's who he is. But the guy who Donald Trump in private is a very different, very courteous, kind person. That's what I got out of it.
So did I. And it was interesting because Bill Maher is probably one of the most vocal critics of Trump, obviously, mm-hmm. I appreciate a good, healthy, respectful debate between two sides. I like seeing two people who disagree be able to communicate effectively with one another and not just throw mud at each other. And I appreciated Bill Maher basically coming back and saying, look, I'm not changing, I'm not flipping, and I'm not pro-Trump by any means. I'm just communicating back to you that the person you see publicly is not the same person that I met. And he wasn't saying good, bad, or indifferent, really. He was just saying it's not the same person. So I bring that up because I think you're right. No, number one, most of the examples that you gave, they didn't have Twitter, right? Of course, he's going to affect more lives now than could have been affected 1,000 years ago because there's more people walking the planet now than there were
even
at that point.
20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So, and, you know, even in, you know, the last half century, news traveled at whatever rate of speed you could travel by carrier, right? So airplanes, boats, automobiles, that's how fast you could move information. Now it's literally the speed of light, right? So information travels faster, and you're right. As far as the ability to make such a big impact without weapons, literally just with words, he can change so much about the global landscape just with the words. It is, and I bring up the Bill Maher thing to say, okay, nobody knows what Trump's going to do because he's always got an angle that the public probably doesn't see, I think. You know, you don't never necessarily know what his true, he's a true gamesman, I guess is the word I'm saying. He knows how to communicate effectively to get the outcome that he wants. And sometimes that may even involve communicating something that he wants you to believe that may not necessarily even be the way he truly feels. So, and again, none of this is pro-Trump or anti-Trump. I'm just, we try to be objective and call what we see. But for investors, like, what does this mean? And it doesn't mean anything. I mean, we're just kind of, this was kind of the end of the conversation before, right? We got to the part where we said, you said he was the most powerful human to ever walk the planet. And we said, okay, let's hit record. So I don't know. We're off the cuff right here. But what does this mean, or does it mean anything? Is this just commentary for the sake of calling it, or just for the sake of making the statement? Or is there anything for investors to glean from this?
Well, I think it's important to... I think it's important to understand that there is the Trump effect on the markets, which is he is the most impactful person in the markets there is, far more so than even Jay Powell is now. Okay.
Yeah.
But could there be what they call a Trump put, right? Where he's, because we know from reports here and there that he does watch the markets, and he is concerned that, you know, the markets, and I'm sure the concern is for the constituency, for the American people. He doesn't want retired people with their IRAs losing all their money. He cares about that. I know I'm sure he does. So I think there, and I think that likely had something to do with the 90-day pause. Okay. So there's sort of this Trump put, but then we have to go all the way back to the beginning of January when we talked about what do we think it's going to be like with Trump. And he recently said he's the best friend American capitalism has ever had. Okay. So I'm willing to take him at his word. And I think he's trying to bring more manufacturing back, and he's trying to make a better regulatory environment. So if that is the case, I think what we said 4 months ago, 5 months ago, holds truer now than it ever has, that there will be more volatility with Trump. But over time, they will do better. Markets will do better. Investors will do better. And this is for investors. And I use the word investors, not traders, investors.
Yeah.
This is where the people managing your money had better make sure they're putting the sweat in and doing the work, because it's where the fundamentals matter. Is if you're trying to get the next hot thing, that's not going to work. You have to make sure you have good balance sheets, good earnings, good leadership, good return of capital, good return on equity positions, good capital structures of these companies, so that you can withstand these times of the market. This has been an incredibly volatile time, right? But again, if you take just the Mag 7, just take those companies, you're talking, you know, $10, $12 trillion in market cap. Are any of those companies going to go out of business? Are any of those share prices going to go to zero and not come back? No, of course they're not. They're going to be okay. Okay. We build those for the future. So as long as you have the confidence in the fundamental side of the portfolio, the technical aspect of it, the volatility aspect of it, again, doesn't matter all that much. And we've touched on this several times in the past, that volatility is what they use for measurement of risk, whether it be standard deviations, Sharpe ratios, beta coefficients, right? Because again, the academicians at the universities could quantitatively measure volatility. And that in and of itself is risk, because if you take any given person who has X amount of dollars on February 19th, well, then on April 8th, they had 20% less than that. Well, no, they didn't. They didn't. It was just the market went down, you know, and Warren Buffett was asked, and it was 2011, 2012 timeframe. He was at a college giving us like a talk in an economics class. And one of the kids raised his hand and said, can I ask you a question? And he said, sure. He said, because it was just after the great financial crisis. He said, how much, you know, you're worth so many hundreds of billions of dollars or billions of dollars. How much did you actually lose during the great financial crisis? That was a lot of money. And he laughed and he said, well, I didn't lose a dime. And he goes, what? Yeah. He goes, because I didn't sell.
Yeah.
So that is where people don't lose money when they don't make bad decisions. And the bad decisions you can make, so for investors, the bad decisions you can make is selling when it's down, when it's low, and when you feel like you have to sell because you just can't take any more pain, that's when you buy.
Yeah.
That's when you buy.
Well, it's funny. I used to use this analogy a long time ago. You know, for a lot of families, the most the biggest asset on their balance sheet is going to be their home, right? Right. Not for everybody, but in a lot of cases. And it's so funny. I used to, you know, when I bought my first house, I would check Zillow pretty regularly and see what my home price had done and all this kind of stuff. And it was cool to see on paper, but it did not matter. I wasn't selling it. It didn't, right. It, you know, but it's so funny. We don't track the market value of our house really at all until, unless we're thinking about selling it. Right. And then at that point, we figure out a price that we want to sell it for, and we try our best to get that price. But we don't think of it that way with our investments. If somebody showed up at your front door every single day and handed you today's home value price, how would that affect your psyche if you were freaking out every single day about the fluctuations of your home value, right?
Right.
But with our portfolios, because it's in front of us and we can see a real-time number every second of every day, we just we stay, you know, more tied to it. But it's – Buffett's right. I mean, you make money on the buying and selling, not the watching of the fluctuations in between.
Right. That being said, though, is before we wrap up here, is I want to – I think I need to make an adjustment to my year-end target. That's that – sort of that 6,800 to 7,000. That existed on a 22.5 multiple. That, but I'm going to say this with a huge asterisk, okay, is our new price target is – call it 6,200 for the end of this year. And that's based off of about, you know, 20 and a half times earnings at about $300 to $305 a share. Okay. That's we're down to about $301 a share for 2026 earnings on S&P, down from 317 in July. So, and I think that's a pretty good number. So we'll probably live 20-ish, maybe a little over 20-ish on the multiple. But the Trump effect is odd. I think he'll bring stronger fundamentals in, better earnings, less regulatory environment. But I think the multiple will contract slightly due to the uncertainty that exists around, you know, his approach to politics. So, you know, although the market prices might be down a little bit, I think over the long term it will actually do better, though, because the fundamentals will be stronger. But the second point of it is I want to make is the Trump effect. Is we just don't know what that is, okay? Is he can – Trump would be the only guy, the only president that could actually take this market to a 23, 24, 25 multiple because he could change the regulatory environment to be so pro-business that we get even more multiple than we would think. So I kind of think we have a binary situation. We could – it's likely I think we're going to end up in the 6,200 range at the end of this year would be my guess. We could finish in 7,200, 7,400. And I think it's kind of I don't think there's a lot of gray area there. I don't think we're gonna hit 65 or 66. I think we're gonna be 62 or like 7,200. Because and that will be nothing more than a drastic delta in the multiple, depending on what is communicated between now and then.
What needs to change? That's a good point. I totally agree with you. I think that especially the first half of that makes total sense. He brings higher volatility, which contracts the multiple, but some of that's going to bring with it better fundamentals, which increases the earnings side of the equation. But what needs to happen? I think so far we've only seen the first half of that. What needs to happen for the second part of your hypothesis or for the second possibility to play itself out? Does he need to just stop being such a lightning rod of controversy with his comments? Are there certain policies you're looking for? What needs to change to see that 23, 24, 25 multiple?
There needs to be a serious global trade agreement inked, period, full stop. Like gotcha. Between China, the Eurozone, Canada, Mexico, Japan, Australia, Zimbabwe, you know, Antarctica, all of it. Yeah. There needs to be a global trade agreement that's put in place that identifies, acknowledges, and thus makes a fair playing field for America, right? So that we're not paying all the tariffs and so we don't pay all the tariffs for everyone and no one else pays anything. Something like that would be step one. Step two would be the regulatory environment, i.e. the fiscal policy accommodation through further and deeper and permanent tax cuts on a corporate level. which I think is probably coming. So those two things, if those two things came in place, then you would see, I think we would see that, that just that the peg would go into the other hole, right? It would just, right. I think we would see fundamentals expand, and we would see the multiple expand because, oh my gosh, we're going to get this additional growth rate. So we're going to price in a higher multiple because of the higher growth rate. So I just kind of see a tale of two markets this year, sort of a 6,200 market or a 7,200 market.
Well, I'll tell you, that's another tale of two markets. Picking a title for this episode is going to be the biggest challenge ever, because I've got a tale of two markets standing between emotions and money. And then somewhere in the middle of all this, we've covered everything from Donald Trump, Jesus Christ, Bill Maher, Kid Rock.
Bill Maher.
I don't know if you could have – I don't think we need to take 3 weeks off anymore. I think we need to be more consistent. You had a lot of build up there, brother.
I know. I was like – I'm like a giant pimple that just popped.
Well, for listeners or viewers out there, if you would be interested in chatting with Matt to discuss your portfolio, not to criticize anything that we say on the show. If you have questions about your portfolio and would like to reach out to Matt and his team, you can visit intelligentinvestment.com or give him a call at 702-655-8300. As always, maybe more than any other show, we are here for entertainment and amusement purposes, not to tell you what to do with your money. That is for you and your financial advisor to decide. But if you would like to talk to Matt, you can do so. Dude, this was a blast. Thanks, man. Good to see you. And look forward. So we are back on next week, right? We'll be back on
next week. Is our second live Intelligent Investment Newsletter review show.
Awesome. Perfect. So we'll be live at 1 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock if you're out in Matland in Las Vegas. We'll be live and looking forward to our second rendition of the quarterly newsletter. And man, had a good time today. Enjoy the chat.
Likewise. Talk soon. Dude.
Later.
As always, the Intelligent Investment Show is for your entertainment, education, and general amusement purposes only. It is not intended to be financial advice or investment advice of any kind. Neither Matt nor I or any of our companies or associated entities know anything about your financial circumstances, so it would be unwise for us to tell you what to do with your money. We encourage you to seek a professional if you do have questions about your portfolio or your financial plans. If you would like to reach Matt and his team, you may do so by giving him a call at 702-655-8300 or visiting intelligentinvestment.com.
We thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Discussions in the Intelligent Investment Show are for educational purposes only. The information presented should not be considered specific investment advice or a recommendation to take any particular course of action. Always consult with a financial professional regarding your personal situation before making investment or financial decisions. The views and opinions expressed are based on current economic and market conditions and are subject to change. There is no guarantee that any statements of future expectations will come to fruition. All investing involves risk, including the potential for loss of principal. Securities offered through United Planners Financial Services, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through American Retirement Planning Group, ARPG, and United Planners are independent companies. Garrett Lill and Wealth Partners are not affiliated with ARPG or United Planners. Any endorsement that I may have given during this recording, it is important to note that I am not a client of ARPG. The views expressed should not be considered representative in any way of my past, present, or future experience with Matt or ARPG. No incentives have been provided to me in connection with any endorsements I may have given on the Intelligent Investment Show. Investing involves risk, and there is no guarantee of any future results, performance, or success.